When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Here's a Bigfoot story from Florida. My story begins in 1978 or thereabouts, when I was a young man of 19 years old. My friend Kenny and I had been riding on some property that we frequently hunted on the Mayaca in southwest Florida. We had Kenny's dog Duke with us, and as we rode, a herd of hogs ran across the road in front of us. We stopped and Kenny released Duke. Within 30 seconds, we could hear a hog squeal, meaning that Duke had caught a hog, and we headed out in the palmettos to dispatch the hog and reap our reward. We found Duke with a 60-pound sow, and I killed her with my knife. Duke caught her underneath a solitary oak tree in the middle of the palmettos, 100 yards off the road. And as I prepared to field dress her, I noticed that she had tumors around her stomach, and we decided to leave her. Well, that evening, Kenny and I took our girlfriends out for dinner and later went to the hunting camp for a few drinks. I told Kenny that we should stop and get that hog head that we had left in the palmettos and scare the girls. On the way to the cabin, I told the girls that I left my knife with the hog and we were going to stop and pick it up. Back then, there was no such thing as a good flashlight, and the one I had was about dead. It was a moonlit night, so we didn't have any trouble navigating. When we got to the hog, I began to cut its head off. It wasn't a simple task in the dark with a dull knife. I worked, and then I heard a noise in the palmettos. I thought it was probably an armadillo, because believe it or not, they can sound like a bull coming through the woods. As the sound approached, I heard a grunt. Well, it was more like a growl, or more like a 1,500-pound kitten purring. I told Kenny to shine the light over there, and that's when we both realized that we were looking at something 10 feet tall, and it weighed 1,000 pounds at least. Kenny was standing behind me, and I was on my knees kneeling over this hog, and we were petrified. Neither one of us flinched, and within just a few seconds, the creature turned around and disappeared into the night. We ran back to the truck, took the girls home, and we headed to Kenny's house to get my truck. The next day, we met for breakfast and we discussed what had happened, and we decided we might be better off just keeping this to ourselves. After breakfast, we rode back out to the property, and we found that the hog was gone with my knife. And that was the last time Kenny and I talked about what we had seen. Hey y'all, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for clicking on the video. My name's Cameron Buckner. This is the Dixie Cryptid Podcast. You can also find this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Audible, anywhere you get your podcast, by doing a search of What If It's True Podcast. and it'll pop right up at the top of the screen. And you can listen with less data and less battery drain on your device. But if you'd like to watch on YouTube, I appreciate it. I've got four stories in this podcast. They're very interesting. And then the last story is actually chapter one of the White Mountain Bigfoot audiobook. It's called Law of the Gun, written by Bobby Clark. It's an audiobook that just became available on Audible last week. If you'd like a promotional code for a free download of that book, just send me an email to dixiecryptid@gmail.com. And in the subject line, write White Mountain Bigfoot. I only have 25 to give out. And if you don't hear back from me, that means that you're the 26th or higher person to ask for one. And I'll keep your email on file because I say this every time, but a lot of people ask for these promo codes and they never redeem them. And I don't know why people do that. No matter what I say, no matter how many times I ask people not to do that, they still do it. So usually about 15 or 20 of them get redeemed, and there's usually 5 to 10 left. So over about a week, if they're not redeemed, I'm going to give them to someone else if I have a person asking for them. So with all that said, hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's get to the rest of it. All right, here we go. In 1999, my brother and I were living in the Honey Lake Valley in the high desert region of Northern California. From our property, situated on Highway 395 North, we had a clear view of that beautiful and huge natural lake. We could also see the nearby Sierra Army Depot, where an unceasing flow of C-130 military aircraft provided us with endless entertainment every evening. 6 days a week, we got up early, made our coffee, and headed to town, where we put in long hours working to make a go of our floor cleaning business. Naturally, we reserved Sundays for church and family gatherings. But in the evenings, sitting in our yard far from the noises and hassles of the world, we watched the distant planes coming in and going at the depot and talked about whatever came to mind. It was peaceful. Even when the conversation lagged or we lost interest in the planes, there was always the Milky Way. The sky in that remote location was clearer, brighter than it was anywhere else. That's why that Saturday night, when we sat out there a little longer than usual, I thought it was so odd that the Army Depot was getting more difficult to see. I asked my brother if he was having the same problem or if it was just my eyes. He said he thought a fog was forming across the lake and moving our way. Within 5 minutes, this fog had spread from the depot across the entire valley and up our mountain, stopping several hundred feet before it got to us. It covered the highway, and we neither saw nor heard any sounds from the diesels. Then a bright, round light appeared to our right, moving towards us at our elevation. My brother thought it might be a car on the 395, but I pointed out that we were 1,000 feet above the highway. Moving towards our left at what we judged to be around 60 miles an hour, it flew to the mountain so quickly we both thought it was going to crash into the north face. Just before contact, however, it abruptly stopped and hovered motionless. A moment later, another orb appeared from the same direction, followed the trajectory of the first light, and stopped just as suddenly beside it in front of the mountain. Then another light, and another, until 7 lights lined up equidistant apart in front of the mountain. We sat in silence, our own bodies equally still as we watched. We knew something was going to happen, we just didn't know what. A new light appeared now, this time from within the mountain. It became larger and brighter as it slowly grew into an opening. A brilliant, blinding light flooded the hillside until finally it stood fully agape, almost beckoningly, patiently waiting. One by one, the seven smaller lights crossed into the gateway and vanished inside. Then, with an almost deliberate sluggishness, the hole resealed itself, shrinking and extinguishing the light until no evidence remained of its existence. Neither of us said a word. It was just amazing. A few minutes later, the fog also receded. The traffic lights from the highway could be seen again, and life returned to normal. A week later, we reported the incident to the National UFO Reporting Center. I purchased 6 acres of property in Gallia County in southwest Ohio. The property is rough terrain and surrounded by the Wayne National Forest. Mine was the last 5 properties in an isolated valley that was a mix of new and old growth timber. With the help of my 2 older brothers, I began building immediately. It wasn't long before we met other landowners and struck up casual friendships. One of them shared this story with us. He said he and another friend were out at his camp, sitting outside a steel shed enjoying a fire they had built and playing music, when something from the South Ridge got their attention. The South Ridge sits at the top of a steep hillside. They couldn't figure out what the noise was or what was making it, but it was loud enough to hear over their radio. While they were sitting there trying to decide what they were hearing, something started down that steep hill and coming towards them. Whatever this thing was, it was making all kinds of noise. It sounded like a bull moose, and it was coming right at them. It scared them enough to make them run inside the camp and lock the door, remembering only after they got inside that they'd left their only weapon outside. Unfortunately, their only window was in the door, and it was facing west, so they never saw this thing. However, he was sure that the thing was bipedal. It was definitely walking on 2 legs as it stomped around like a man. He also said it sounded really heavy. It came all the way down to the hillside, walked a half circle around the east side of the camp, and then moved off up the other side of the valley. Although the man never mentioned any verbal noises coming from the creature, he did admit to being afraid, so much so that he didn't come back there for 3 years. When he did come back, it was to do some basic work and then sell the place. 2 years later, I was there with my 2 middle school age sons and a couple of their friends. We had put a long day in of cutting firewood and doing other typical camp work, so I decided to hit the sack around 10 o'clock. I slept on the couch on the first floor, and I gave the upstairs to the boys. Of course, being young boys, they had a lot more energy than me, so they weren't ready for bed yet. Instead, they stayed outside enjoying the fire. At some point in the night, I woke to the sound I eventually recognized as someone throwing stones or acorns on the tin roof. I immediately assumed the boys were pranking me, so I crept over to the kitchen window and looked out to the front lawn. They were all sitting around the campfire ring, apparently oblivious to anything going on inside the cabin. I shrugged my shoulders and went to lay back down. 10 minutes later, it started again, and this time with bigger stones making louder noises. I was sure it had to be the boys, so I went out on the porch and accused them of messing with me. They all denied it, and I believed them, but to be safe, I took my flashlight out and I searched the perimeter of the yard. I didn't find anything, so I gave up and I went back to bed. After that, there were no other problems. The following deer season, I was up in a thicket in the Wayne National Forest when I came across some scat that looked to be a bear. But there were no bears reported in the area at the time. Looking back, I wish I had looked at the scat better instead of just assuming it was a bear. To hear my old camp neighbor tell his story raised the hairs on my arms. He was truly frightened by what he had heard that night, and that ain't easy to do to a good old country boy like him. But due to health issues, I ended up selling my camp a few years later. But to this day, I believe what my neighbor heard that night was a Bigfoot, and so does my neighbor. Many years before this, in 1978, when I was a junior in high school, I lived in the tiny Pennsylvania town of Rexford in McKean County. The town is located in a wide valley, and our house was on the north end of town. A friend and I were out driving around in his truck, just killing time until I had to be home. Eventually, we pulled up in front of my parents' house. It was raining slightly, so we just sat there for a few minutes and waited until it stopped. And then we got out, and as we stood on the road shooting the bull, something made us both look up. Above us, we saw a triangular craft slowly gliding overhead in complete silence. It had three lights on each angle tip, and that seemed to glow rather than shine. It also had a red light on it somewhere near the center, I think. I'm guessing it wasn't more than 1,000 feet off the ground, definitely below the cloud cover. I remember asking my friend what he was seeing. He was a Navy brat whose dad was a naval survival instructor for some 20 years, so I was pretty sure my friend knew his aircraft. Like me, he just kept watching until the craft slowly glided over the valley out of view. Only then did he turn to me and say he didn't know what it was. It never made a sound. My friend went home after that and I went inside. I didn't say anything to anyone about it at the time. A few years later, I was living in Indiana, Pennsylvania, sitting at home on my day off watching an episode of the Phil Donahue show about UFOs. People were drawing pictures of the UFOs they'd seen. And to my shock, there on the screen was a drawing of the same triangular craft we had seen. The only difference was that they saw two or three in groups. I now wonder if we had turned around that night, would we have seen more? Later, in 2017, I decided to try and locate my old school friend. Over the years, I'd moved here and there, and we'd lost track of each other. Eventually, I got his number and I gave him a call. I needed to know if he still remembered that incident. The first thing out of his mouth was, "Wow, I just told my granddaughter about that incident." Both of these stories are true and they happened to me. And thank you for reading them and keep up the good work.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Here's an email from Virginia. The man writes that, "I was born on the family farm in Virginia, and I worked there all my life. The events I'm about to tell you happened on this farm. Repairing fences is a typical job on our place. They keep livestock on our property as well as keep our neighbors' animals out of our fields. 2 weeks prior to this event, I had worked for a week to restring an old fence that needed repair. It's not the most difficult work, but it's not the easiest. While working on a piece of equipment in the shed, one of my hands drove up and skidded to a stop and frantically ran over to me saying he had knocked a deer down a few minutes ago. Well, that wasn't odd news. Not so that he would be sweating and speaking so fast that I hardly understood half of what he was saying. I asked him to slow down and catch his breath so that I could follow. He took a few minutes and appeared to lower his heart rate and get control of his breathing. All right, there was a nice group of does that walked out of the trees in the south field where I've been hunting this year. The season's almost over and we need some meat, so I killed her, he said. He looked at his feet for several seconds and I thought he was done. And then his breathing began coming in shallow heaves again. Come over here and sit down and relax, I said, pointing to an old log stool next to the barn door. Now catch your breath and let's start over. He sat down and took several deep breaths and he continued. I didn't hit that doe right, a little above her heart, I think. She jumped straight up in the air and ran back to the tree line. And when she tried to jump the fence, her rear legs caught on the top wire and she went down. Well, I sat there until she was dead and I climbed out of the shooting house. And when I turned away from the ladder to go get her, there was a huge bear standing over her. Now, I don't know where it came from. I haven't seen a bear all year. But there it was, hunkered over her. And I yelled at it to run it off my deer and it stood up on its rear legs and it looked right at me. But it wasn't a bear. It was a giant hairy monster. I think I took a step forward, and as soon as I moved, it bent down and threw that doe over its shoulder, and it walked up into the trees. I stood there for several minutes until I couldn't see it anymore. That thing took the whole fence with it when it stepped over. I guess it got its leg hung up in the barbs. It took a few posts with it and then started snapping staples out of the post. Well, he was way up in the woods when I saw the fence go slack. And I think he either broke the wire or got himself untangled. There was a long silence that I broke. Well, how far was the deer from the shooting house? I asked. Maybe 40 yards, he said. Let's go look at the fence, I said. I'm not going back down there, he said. You can go, but not me. I drove on down there, and sure enough, he was telling the truth about the fence. I don't know what dragged that fence up into those trees. I couldn't have done it without a tractor. No human or even a bear could have done that much damage. He said it was an animal. Well, it must have been a big one. A few months later, I was supposed to meet one of my hands in a field to repair another fence. I got to the site and I gathered my tools and material and I walked through a ravine to the area that we were to work. He should have been there waiting on me. I was 10 minutes late. I waited another 30 minutes, and here he came running down the slope straight at me. What's your rush? I asked. Well, I parked next to your truck, he said. And I got out, and I shut the door, and I looked over the bed of the truck about to get my tools out. And out walks this giant hairy monster from the trees. He walked across that ditch right there, and straight through the field and down into the swampy area on the low end of the field. I didn't know what that thing was, so I laid down on the grass behind my truck so he couldn't see me, and I watched him walk right down into that slough from under my truck. All right, show me where he was, I said. The guy was not afraid as the other one who wouldn't go back to the spot where he killed the deer, and we walked to the trucks and down to the edge of the mud where the wetlands started. You see that big limb laying there in the water, he said. Yeah, what about it? I asked. He bumped his head on that limb when he walked under that tree, and he acted like the limb pissed him off, and he reached up and yanked that limb off with one hand and threw it where it's laying now. Man, that limb must weigh 200 pounds, I said. It was a big limb that I would have had to cut up to even move it. You say he threw that thing? Damn right he did. That's why I said it was a monster. Let's get out of here. I'm getting the creeps, he said. Truthfully, I was getting the willies too, so I agreed and we went back to work. My father once told me that he and some teenage friends were raccoon hunting on a cold moonlit night in the 1920s. In those days, their equipment was made up of a miner's lamp, a .22 single-shot rifle, and a pack of raccoon dogs. The dogs had treed a raccoon, or so they thought. It took them a while to get to the dogs, but when they got there and shined their light into the tree, there wasn't a coon. The dogs weren't jumping up in the tree like normal. They kind of hung back and they just kept barking. My father lowered his light to ground level, and standing there behind the tree was a creature he said looked like a giant wolf on two legs. The creature lunged at the dogs, and they took off back to the truck with my father and his friends right behind them. My father said he didn't know if that thing was chasing them, but they sure ran like it was. They never hunted that area again, but then he saw it again 2 weeks later on a cold night, running across a field not too far from where the dogs had it cornered. Over 20 years later, while driving Old Leesburg Pike, or Route 7 in Northern Virginia, he and my mother were driving across the bridge over Goose Creek. In the middle of the bridge, he thought he could see a man standing there. When he was closer and the lights illuminated the man better, he saw that it wasn't a man. It was a tall, lanky, apparently covered in hair creature. His mind went back to those nights in the 1920s when he was a teenager. My father made the decision not to back out of that bridge, and instead to speed past this thing. As the car approached, the creature leapt onto the railing to avoid being hit, and as they passed, it swiped at the car. I don't remember my mother ever talking about this night. Maybe she wanted to forget it. In 1959, the year I was born, my father saw it again crossing a field at night on our family farm. I don't know what this creature is. Maybe there are more than one, but my family and friends have seen it many times through the last years. Whatever it is, it must have a long lifespan, or we're seeing its offspring over time. They appear to stay well hidden and away from humans. I assume it is by chance, or that the odds are good that some humans will catch a rare sight of them while they move around at night. And now for Chapter 1 of The White Mountain Bigfoot, Volume 3, Law of the Gun by Bobby Clark. It's now available on Audible. There'll be a link in the description. Chapter 1. The Murder of Young Billy. It was hot in the Slot Canyon where we rode, ready for trouble and our rifles across our saddles and anger etched hard on our faces. The sun beat down unmercifully on the riders and horses alike. We had been on the trail of the rustlers for 2 days now and had suspected rustling for weeks. We had been unable to prove it, that is, until Billy was murdered. The size of the Broken Arrow Ranch was such that it was hard to get an accurate count on the cattle, except for during spring roundup. It wasn't until Billy had ridden in, about dark 3 days ago, barely alive, with a nasty bullet wound to the scalp and a bullet in his back, that we knew for sure trouble was upon us. Billy had whispered hoarsely, "Jim Reynolds shot me, rustling." Billy died that night in Hank's arms, and it was a hard, ugly, senseless death. Hank had been the ranch foreman for years now and had taken young Billy in and treated him like a son. Billy had ridden in, half-starved and ready to give up on life 2 years ago, after losing his family in a wagon train massacre. He had just turned 16 last month. Hank took it hard. No one blamed him. Everyone liked Billy. Since becoming owner of the Broken Arrow Ranch 6 months ago, I had been busy getting settled in and learning the lay of the land. Charlie, my wife, whose real name is Lizzie McCabe, had been busy taking care of Ma Johnson, as well as 7-year-old Laura and 5-year-old Daniel that we had adopted. Charlie was still getting used to having a home of her own as well. Zacchaeus and I had rescued Charlie, Laura, and Daniel from the same slave traders that had kidnapped Zacchaeus' little sister, Echo. Ma Johnson had been bedbound with a broken hip, brought on from an attack by an outlaw named Preacher, when he had tried to take over the ranch. Zacchaeus and I had foiled Preacher's plans, and Ma Johnson had deeded the ranch to me, with the stipulation that she was able to stay until she died. She had no children to pass the ranch to. Jim Reynolds was one of the outlaws that I had run off because he had sided with Preacher. In the old days, the Broken Arrow Ranch had been known as a safe haven for outlaws. But after taking over, at Ma Johnson's request, I had told all of them that the Broken Arrow was no longer going to harbor outlaws and that there was a shoot-on-sight order in place. It was a harsh land, and I had to get the point across to the harsh men that rode in the shadows. We had taken only enough time the next morning to bury Billy in the ranch cemetery. It was a simple ceremony, with Hank saying a few words. The entire ranch was in attendance, including Ma Johnson. It had not been hard to backtrack Billy. He had been sent to one of the Southern Line shacks to check on the condition of the cattle in the lower pastures. He found the tracks of four different horses that had been pushing what looked to be a small herd of about 25 cattle when Billy had ridden up on them. The tracks told the story. Billy had been shot from a distance, probably with a rifle. The bullet had knocked him from his horse and left him unconscious with a head wound. There was blood on the grass where he had fallen. The four riders had converged on Billy. One of the riders, with a badly worn boot heel, had dismounted and walked up to Billy. That was where the rider had shot Billy in the back. The powder burns around the wound told the story. They must have thought Billy was dead and had ridden off with the cattle. Billy had dragged himself to the horse and somehow managed to climb on and stay on to get back to the ranch. From there, it was not hard to pick up the trail of the cattle. The trail led to a winding route through the canyons of the Badlands. Sometimes going for miles in the bottom of twisting, turning slot canyons that at times were only wide enough for one rider. At other times, they widened out to as much as a half mile of jumbled boulders and brush. On the afternoon of the second day, we were getting close. The tracks were just a few hours old. The canyon we were riding in was gradually widening out into a basin with some sparse grass and some scattered cattle. All of them in sight were wearing pig pen brands in varying degrees of healing. The pig pen brand was a crosshatch pattern and was a brand used to easily cover almost any other brand. After a quick head count, Hank said, "Boss, it looks to be about 300 head or so. And that's what we can see from here. I recognize that old mossy horn cow with the broken horn and the scars on her back. She got those from a cougar attack when she was just a yearling. Only last time I saw her, she was wearing the Broken Arrow brand. Looks like the rustlers have been holding them here, getting ready for a drive to market." "Looks that way," I said. "Smoke coming from those cottonwoods down there in the bottoms. Looks like a camp of sorts. Let's circle around and meet up just after dark. Hank, you take Slim and Tommy and work your way down south. Zacchaeus and I'll go north and come down the creek. We'll take them by surprise just after dark." The valley we were in was surrounded by high sandstone bluffs and broken dry land beyond them. The cattle were not inclined to leave the valley on their own. Zacchaeus turned and dropped down into a dry wash that headed in the general direction that we needed to go and offered cover and concealment from the outlaw camp. I watched Zacchaeus as he rode ahead of me. He sat easy on his big stallion named Denali, meaning the Great One in Navajo. Zacchaeus had only been riding horses for a few months, but he had taken to it like a duck to water. Few people believe Zacchaeus was much more than a myth. Truthfully, I had felt the same way. Until that day, I nearly cashed in my chips down in Arizona Territory when Blackie had slipped on a steep mountain trail. He had fallen on top of me into a gap between two boulders. I was weak from blood loss and fever, and from a wound in my side caused by a White Mountain Apache arrow. Unable to get up, Blackie and I both would have died in that canyon if it had not been for Zacchaeus' parents lifting Blackie off me. Zacchaeus was a White Mountain Bigfoot. He stood 6 foot 10 inches tall and weighed well over 350 pounds, with a glossy coat of 2-inch coarse hair covering most of his body. Like his father, Zacchaeus was massively built, but was still nearly a foot shorter than his father, Samson. Following a dangerous rescue of Zacchaeus' little sister, Echo, from Mexican slave traders, Zacchaeus and I had been saddle partners and best friends. Even though we could not talk to each other, we had worked out a fairly good system of sign language and worked together really well. Shortly before sundown, we found a grassy patch next to the small creek and well hidden from the rustlers' camp. Picketing the horses, we began working our way through the cottonwoods with Zacchaeus leading. His keen sense of smell and hearing was something I had learned to trust. 20 minutes later, we were hunkered down behind a clump of manzanita watching 4 men lounging around a fire. Jim Reynolds was sitting on a rock with his back to a tree, his boots propped up on a log in front of him, one badly worn boot heel visible in the fading light. One of the other men, a tall, sandy-haired, narrow-shouldered man with a big nose, was stirring the contents of a pot on the fire. 2 more rustlers were lying on their bedrolls waiting for supper to be ready. The camp was a mess with cans and bottles littering the ground. A few minutes later, the sound of an owl came from the trees on the other side of the fire. Hank and the boys were in place. Zacchaeus answered back with a single owl call. Once the rustlers had started eating and had their hands full, I would give the signal and Zacchaeus would give 2 owl hoots, signaling Hank and the boys to move in from the other side. "Come get it," Big Nose called out, ladling out scoops of stew onto the waiting outlaws' plates. At my signal, 2 mournful owl hoots floated out across the valley as we stood up and moved into the edge of the firelight, eyes cold and rifles ready. Thank you for following along with this podcast. I really appreciate you. Again, if you'd like a promotional code for a free download of The Law of the Gun, it's the White Mountain Bigfoot Volume 3 audiobook by Bobby Clark. Send me an email to dixiecryptid@gmail.com. And what did I say right in the top? White Mountain Bigfoot? I think that was it. Put it in the subject line and I'll know to look at it. It'll catch my eye and I'll send you a promotional code right back. But I'm going to ask you again, if you're not going to redeem it, if you don't have an account with Audible or don't have the Audible app or don't have access or any way to download this, please don't send me an email and ask for a code because it just gets wasted. Someone else could use it. So if you're going to use it, great. Send me an email and I'll send you a code. But if you know you're not going to use it, just don't waste my time or your time. I appreciate that, and we'll see you guys on the next podcast. Thanks.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.